right, welcome back, everybody. Here we are once again with a topic, frankly, Dom, I'm embarrassed it took us this long to get to, but one I'm excited to dive in on, and that is the best asterisk merges in the history of Survivor. First of all, how are you doing?
I'm doing great, and I'm a little surprised that we haven't covered this topic so far, but there is also, with this new format, a thousand monkeys on a thousand typewriters kind of quality to this, but eventually we will cover the entire span of all possible topics under, you know, the umbrella of human knowledge. So it's only a matter of time.
We're just slowly making our way through the list until we have covered every single thing that humans have ever thought about, and we will not rest until that mission has been accomplished. But I say best asterisk merges here because, and this may be a big letdown to start off the podcast, I do not know how much more we, at least, need to be saying about the Kagayan and Heroes versus Villains merges in particular. We've covered both of those seasons episode by episode, and over the course of, you know, 10-ish years of podcasting about Survivor, those two have really stood out and come up time after time after time after time. And what I really want to get to today is the, I guess more accurately, underappreciated merges from the history of Survivor.
Yeah, it turns out there's not much more you can say about things that everybody agrees are great. I mean, it's good that we all agree on that. It's nice. I'm glad we can put our ideological differences aside and come together. But like you say, what more is there to say about Heroes versus Villains, Kagayan, which even if you are a skeptic of either one of those seasons in the big picture kind of sense, you know, I know there are people who will take the contrarian take that Heroes versus Villains is overrated. I think even most of those people would have a special place in their heart for that merge episode. I guess if you're one of those really old school purists who hates the idea of returning players or hidden immunity idols, then really the entire premise of that season is not for you, but specifically that merge episode will not be either. But by and large, if whatever standards you use to decide what's good Survivor, those two episodes are going to hit the mark.
Yes, so if anyone would be interested in our extended Kagayan and Heroes versus Villains takes, as I said, we have covered each of those seasons in their entireties, episode by episode, over on the Patreon feed at patreon.com/DomandColin. You can find those in the archives over there. But setting aside the two that I would consider historically best regarded Survivor merges and most talked about, and I would assume if, like, RHAP were to do a poll about the best Survivor merges, they would probably run away with it. But
hold up. When you say if they were to, have they not? Are we
That's a fair question.
The subjunctive actually the right mode there?
I'm guessing if it hasn't already happened, Kurt Clark is well underway on the Google form for the inevitable day that comes around. But let me ask you, Dom, because I was trying to anticipate what you would say to this, like what answer you would give to the following question, and I have honestly no idea which direction you would go here. What is your favorite non-Kagayan or Heroes versus Villains merge?
I'm going to say also anyone looking for hot takes on the Guatemala merge episode, you know, the Fiji merge episode, they're all there too. So
China as well. We're probably forgetting at least one season that we've covered. Maybe not. But
and many more. But there's a little something there for everyone, even if we don't quite remember ourselves what that might be. Anyway, so my favorite merge episodes. So this is a tough question for me because there are now many seasons as both I age and my memory in general fades, and also the amount of time since I saw any one of these seasons continue to lengthen. There must be many seasons now, especially those ones which in our own rankings would be in like that, you know, 15 to 30 range, or temporally were a long time ago, maybe before we started covering them, where I don't have a great memory of the season as a whole, and specifically do not have a good memory of the merge episode. And so I am open to the possibility that there is a mostly forgotten, mostly by me, season out there that has a merge episode that's a diamond in the rough, a forgotten gem that if only I could dredge it up from my memory would be on this list. But I don't actually know what the candidates of that might be.
So for me, it's the opposite. And incidentally, job well done. Not even beginning to answer the question there.
Thank you.
But I found that in trying to think through all of the merges to come up with my own kind of list, it was drastically easier for me to remember the very early days and kind of middle era, as things stand right now, of Survivor in far more vivid detail than I can for the seasons that we have covered in their entirety over the last 2-3 years. I actually, just before we came on air here, put out a poll because I wanted to find out if I was just losing my memory or what was going on here. But I feel like, and I know I've brought this up before, but I wanted to get some hard data here. I feel like we're probably not alone in having less clear memories of like the nitty gritty details, not just at the merge, but across the board on the more recent seasons. And I've always chalked that up to so many idols and advantages being in play that any given week you can come in and talk about it somewhat coherently, but after more episodes have passed that season and more time has passed just away from that season, I honestly feel like most, maybe not most, but plenty of people, like by the time Edge of Extinction was down to Final 7 or Final 6 or whatever, would have had a pretty rough go at recapping what really went down at the merge. I guess that may be an unfair example, but point is, I feel like modern merges and just episodes and game dynamics in general are potentially a lot just harder to remember because so much is going on, not necessarily politically, but with the magic powers either falling from the sky or being found or just being inserted so much more often than they ever used to be versus back in the day. It's very easy to keep track of, okay, in Survivor Africa, the Boran tribe was the one that was up, right? And it was like a 6-4, very straightforward dynamic that's hard to mess up. Yeah. What was the other tribe called in Africa?
Samburu?
Yes, thank you.
Yes, there we go. Okay, so I totally agree with that, and I'll qualify what I said by adding that what I mean is for the early seasons that we covered, and by that I mean the mid to late 20s, okay. I feel like I have a much more vivid memory of those than I do of basically anything in the 30s. And then also anything that came before those in up until the roughly pre-Heroes vs. Villains era, I don't really have a strong memory of. I guess the China, Micronesia, Gabon, Token Dreams run, that's all pretty vivid for me. And we have covered some of those seasons in the interim, so we got the Fijis and the Guatemalas off the board. But if you ask me to recall any momentous events from the merge episode in Exile Island or Vanuatu or so on and so forth, I would struggle. You might need to tap me out and get someone else in.
So there is kind of a stretch like right around the point you're mentioning that I basically have glossed over for today's episode because it seemed like there was that kind of shortly after All-Stars run of a lot of merges going in with uneven numbers and the people on the wrong side of that just don't have a ton of room to play in that kind of situation. And that, I think, is more or less why the Hidden Immunity Idol was introduced to begin with, is to give the people in the minority some kind of extra outs there. But I do think that it's a noteworthy distinction, and one that will probably come up more in this episode than it generally does, which is I have been watching Survivor since the very beginning. I'm born and raised in America. I'm older than Dom, where I was 12, 13 when Survivor began, and do have memories of watching those early seasons in real time, and furthermore, memories of never being able to really talk about it with anyone in real time and just rewatching the VHS tapes that I had of the episodes that I recorded as they aired, and really just having to dwell in my own thoughts on so many merges from those early seasons over the years before social media was even a thing and I found other people with whom to talk Survivor, that I would guess this will be like an historically, if not the most glaring illustration of the difference in our backgrounds as Survivor fans.
I really wish I could summon up more details for a lot of these seasons, and it would not surprise me given the emphasis that certainly we have placed on the merge episode in the past. If let's take Exile Island as an example, which given its cast of crazies and all of the wacky stuff going on, I remember shockingly little about, but that is the exact kind of season where I feel like I should be able to say, okay, well, couldn't tell you what happened in episode 5, but the merge episode now, don't get me started on that. But instead, just that blurs into the background as well. So I don't know if we always assigned more significance to that than maybe we should have at the time, or if it's something which, as you're covering the season in real time, looks more and more important. And it's this looming checkpoint, which when you get there, you know, in theory, this is going to determine the future course of the season, and this is in all likelihood going to be one of the better episodes in the season. And so you definitely look forward to that and build up your expectations for it. But I wonder if that experience is different when you're just watching these seasons for the first time, maybe you're binging them, or even if you're going back to rewatch and you kind of know how all of this ends. If you know how that pivotal merge vote is going to break that determines whether Tribe A or Tribe B, as was often the case in some of these older seasons, was going to go on to win, then what is the point of the merge episode at that point? Maybe it's coasting on its legacy more than anything else.
That's actually, I think, a really interesting idea, and I'm at least in the short term very into it, where on a rewatch I do wonder if like the merge may be the number one episode that suffers the most. The finale is probably also in there. Yeah. In that conversation too, but merges I feel like can be particularly boring compared to watching them unspoiled.
Also the premiere as well, where instead of meeting all these people for the first time, and if you're anything like me, you get that chill down your spine as you get the narration over the opening sequence. When you know exactly how that's going to unfold and which of the people talking themselves up in that opening sequence will do well and which won't, then that loses some of its luster too. So maybe the takeaway there is that all of the episodes that in theory are meant to be most important and most significant suffer the most on a rewatch. And I guess that makes sense if you follow it to its natural conclusion. But regarding why the more recent merge episodes have also been less memorable at the same time, I think it's not just the abundance of twists that are in play, but it is the larger editing philosophy, where in the past there was always this blend of certainty and uncertainty, where you roughly knew, or so you thought, what the dynamics were on each individual tribe, and then the question was going to be, what happens when these two tribes mix, and maybe there's someone on the bottom of this side or that side who could be cajoled over, or there's this quest for power, there's a new idol in the game, and who's going to get that? Is that going to change anything or be played correctly for someone? Is that going to overturn the result of the vote? And the twist can do something to liven that up. And if there is a merge episode really defined by one of those twists, I think you're more likely to remember it. I think it's more the case now, though, that you often don't know what the dynamics are, even within the tribes themselves. You don't have a good sense of who's really aligned with who likes who. You maybe know who dislikes who if there's been some big argument, some big blow up at camp. But by and large, if you don't know the political dynamic of the two tribes going in, it's hard to get that invested in what the dynamic is going to be coming out of it. It doesn't feel like some big sea change is taking place. And if it's a season where there's been at least one swap, and then you weren't quite sure what was going on those original tribes, and now post-swap you don't have much time for that to settle, and they're not doing a great job of conveying who's with who and who's not with who and why, by the time you get to the merge, and maybe again this is my attention span deteriorating, I find myself just checking out of that political aspect of the game altogether almost. And it's like, well, okay, you come back to me and update me when there's some new information, but otherwise I'm not going to invest myself into trying to unpack this season, which seems to be almost deliberately inscrutable.
I am totally with that, and I now realize I brought up that I've put up this Twitter poll and have finally got some hard data to present, and did not present the data that I have, and I will
preface... I guess there is literally no possible way for this poll to be 50-50, but maybe they found a way. I would be impressed.
It's going to be a tough ask to get this one to split evenly four ways here, but Dom, I said, how many of the merge vote dynamics from specifically Survivor 34 to 39 do you feel like you have a legitimately clear memory of? And then in parentheses, not every detail, but you could somewhat confidently jog a Survivor literate's person's memory on how the vote went down beyond just who was booted. I listed the options of option one, one or two, option two, or I'm going to say option B, most of them, option C, literally all of them, option D, zero, / show me the results. And right away, I recognized the error in my having set this up for a couple of reasons. Most notably, I got pretty quickly some responses saying, like, I would have put a much lower number, but all of these seasons at the time of this recording have been brought up in the obvious bottom tier of the RHAP countdown, and that has refreshed my memory on it. That being said, even with RHAP going on and even with these being some of the most recent seasons at the time of this recording, one or two coming in here with 37%. And right away, I regretted having it set as one or two together, because I think there's virtually no chance that many Survivor fans are forgetting about Chris Noble.
Yeah, the methodology here may leave a bit to be desired.
I only have four options. What do you want me to do? What would you...
I don't know if reviewer one and reviewer two are going to have kind words about the how this poll is constructed. But hey, you made a valiant effort of it. And it is a sad reflection of the state of the show nowadays that people are able to write in and say, normally these would have faded from my view, which in itself is kind of sad given that they are the most recent seasons, but also they are so bad that in a reverse countdown they have just been brought up, and therefore that jogged my memory again. So really a tragic tale all around there.
I got just moments ago a response from Taylor Cotter Bruno here saying, I watched the Game Changers merge yesterday and I don't think I can articulate it.
Yeah, I remember coming in to that episode specifically and saying, maybe this is me being wildly unprofessional, but I don't know what just happened. Can you tell me? And if you're in the same spot, then we really had nothing to say about this episode, really. So if you can unpack it and make sense of it, be my guest. But otherwise, I don't have too much more to add.
And I definitely don't mean to suggest that no one remembers anything that happens on these merges. As I will continue to list through these results here that I've totally pulled away from and now can't find anymore. Okay, we had 37% for one or two. Option B, most of them, by which I mean like three or four or five, 34%. So that right there, we're already at 71%, remembering either not all of them or zero. And then the percentage of people thus far through the first 208 votes that remember literally all of the rough details from the merges on 34 through 39, 12%, and then 0/ show me the results got 19%. Now, I would guess the vast majority of my Twitter followers are hardcore Survivor fans. So for 0/ show me the results to be, relatively speaking, trouncing the people who remember all of the merges from the most recent seasons, I feel like does at least a passable job illustrating the concept I'm struggling to get at, but hopefully that makes it a bit more clear.
Without speculating about the intellectual humility and honesty of your Twitter followers, I don't know if we really put that 12% to the test, how many of them would pass with flying colors. I like to think most of them, but who knows. And then you also have the ever-present lizard man constant of whenever anyone does literally any poll, there will always be some people whose answers bear completely no relation at all to either the reality or the question itself. So we got to factor in those people too. With all of that in mind, I wonder if... So I was thinking earlier as we discussed this topic, you would expect that if what makes an episode good, by and large, is the cast delivering. And, you know, if the cast was delivering at the start of the season, then they're going to be delivering at these various checkpoints throughout the season, with the caveat that sometimes the most engaging cast members just won't be there anymore. They got voted out. They got blindsided. Maybe the thing that makes an episode or this episode more interesting is the fact that one of these big players, big personalities, goes down in flames. But in general, if the cast is well-rounded, then they're going to be hitting the right notes at most points, and that's going to contribute to the overall reception of the season. So I think most of the time, a season that we regard as good is going to have a good merge episode, and vice versa. I do wonder, though, what are the exceptions that stand out to you? So are there episodes which, or seasons which are mostly forgettable to you, but that merge episode was especially good for some reason, or vice versa, where the season as a whole was good, but that merge episode actually was underwhelming, either in real time or in retrospect.
So Chris Noble, first of all, stands out as someone where the merge boot I thought was one of the highlights of the season, and not that I hated Ghost Island overall by any stretch, but I would cite that as one where the merge boot quality pretty drastically exceeds the overall season quality. And then as far as the second part, the two, I will say, maybe three, that come to mind all kind of fit in the same bucket for me, which is love the seasons overall, but I feel like the merge kind of got set back because of either medevacs or quits. And to their credit, I think in each of these cases, the editors or whoever's designing the stories of these episodes did a good job of kind of making the merge where someone's going to be eliminated in like a non-vote way, kind of like a part one to an eventual, not technically the merge, but basically the first merge boot kind of episode. And I'm talking about Token Sheens, San Juan del Sur, and Ko Rong are all seasons that I think are very near the top tier, if not in the top tier, of Survivor seasons. But if you were to just pull the episode where the tribes merge together and watch that in isolation, I do not think you would come away with the same sense as pretty much any other episode in those seasons.
The Chris Noble example is interesting to me because I think in that case, there is still a consistent narrative that runs through both the season as a whole, but also that merge episode where, although it's kind of inverted, because in this case, the reason or one thing that contributed to people disliking the season is the very reason I think that this episode worked so well was that it was essentially a set piece episode. It was a character study of maybe that's putting too, you know, highfalutin a gloss on it, but it was a focus on these big characters in particular. It was Chris v. Dom, and you know, Chris is this massive character, Dom's this massive character, so that kind of works. It's a Clash of the Titans, and you understand this can't be every single episode, but for this episode and the way it's built up, it worked. The issue was it kind of was every episode, and you had this excessive focus on some characters and some players. There are others who just completely vanished from the spotlight altogether, and then even for the people who were somewhat in between, you know, the Kellen Bechtolds of the world, it felt like all they got to say were just the same lines over and over again. So I think you could tie why this episode worked to why the season didn't, which is it's kind of almost too much of a good thing, or it's this is the danger in assuming because people liked this model for an episode, they're going to like that whole thing extended into a season as a whole. And I feel like there is a cautionary tale to be learned there.
I definitely remember as we were talking about Ghost Island in real time, finding the merge interesting, obviously seeing Chris sit on an idol that expired like the next time when he knew he was in trouble is a very noteworthy thing. And I get why the producers would want to really build him up as a guy the audience would be happy to see that exact kind of thing happen to. However, I think I remember coming in here pretty routinely saying we're seeing so much of Dom versus Chris, and it seems like there is just no way this is ever going to go Chris's direction here.
Also, it's so much Dom versus Chris that when one of Dom and Chris ends up going, what fills that void? And maybe it's now that one of those is gone, the rest of the cast comes into the spotlight, gets a chance to breathe. That's not what ended up happening. And so instead, the rest of the season kind of floundered from there. And likewise, if Chris getting blindsided with that temporary idol in his pocket, if that is the exclamation point on the entire blindside, the fact that that idol was a part of the season in the first place, as well as another two dozen twists and historical relics and so on and so forth, that is part of a larger whole that people were very dissatisfied with.
Yes, and I now realize we have spent 20-ish minutes not really addressing the actual question at hand here and talking almost exclusively about the seasons that we're saying no one has any memory of. But in thinking through some of the merges that really stood out to me in trying to brainstorm those that perhaps don't get enough love, I really found myself and maybe this is just complete nostalgia bias, yearning for the days of the VHS recordings, thinking about those early seasons. And maybe it's because in a lot of those cases, the merge was like the last really kind of exciting vote, because once someone won the day at the merge, their alliance was pretty much just smooth sailing through to the finale. But the very first merge in the history of Survivor, which I've said many, many times over the years on this podcast, features my single favorite Survivor-related Wikipedia entry, is the vote tally at the Borneo merge, where pretty much any other vote that you look up on a Survivor Wikipedia page, it generally split between two people, like it's a 5-2 vote or a 7-4 vote, or however many people are left. The Borneo merge was 4-1-1-1-1-1-1-1. It has to like take so much more space. The column is, at least used to be, a lot wider. And I love that first and foremost about the Borneo merge, but also just piecing together in retrospect, like what happened to that Pagong tribe and just what it meant for the future of Survivor to see the merge go the way it did. And obviously the subsequent votes and the rest of that season. And Gretchen recognizing as the votes are coming in, oh my God, it's me. And seeing the kind of blueprint for what type of person has a tendency at least to be booted at the merge. Like the person you probably thought was in pretty good shape, at least in many cases, now becomes one of the biggest targets. And the game is completely flipped. I feel like Borneo definitely stands the test of time as far as the merge goes. And then let me ask you, Dom, do you have memories of two merges I really enjoyed, the Australia and Africa merges, not so much because the political lines were blurred, because they surely weren't, but particularly like the nuances of Colby deliberately trying to pile the votes onto him, knowing it was going to be a tie and knowing that previous votes were the tiebreaker and he didn't have any against him. And then T-Bird voting for Lex after she and Clarence were standing up there holding their arms up in the Parvati Shallow has won this a couple times memorial challenge where the bucket falls on you when you move your arm a little bit. I feel like both of those did a really good job to spark those seasons.
I remember that those things happened, to answer your question, okay. But literally nothing else about either of those episodes. And I am realizing now that in an era where Pogonging was the natural order of things, and winning that merge vote meant that at least your alliance, if not you, was set for the endgame. Of course, the merge vote is going to feel like it's higher stakes, because it is. It is literally $1 million vote for someone in your alliance. Whereas if you, barring some incredible immunity run and stuff like that, but if you flash forward to the modern game, where it often feels like the merge vote is just about getting out some kind of troublemaker, but really does not tell you much about who else is well-placed to go deep in the game. And I remember you actually, when you were on RHAP a while back now, talking about the merge vote, right? Like, of course RHAP has done this. Oh, you were there. It was literally you.
Oh, my God. Oh, my God.
Are you kidding me? Hello?
I totally forgot about this. I completely forgot. I'm sorry. Oh, my God.
When you were on that episode, I remember you saying that in your research, you found that there was such a high correlation, more so than basically anything else, between being on the right side of that merge vote and, or rather, I think the winner being on the right side of that merge vote, to put it that
right.
way.
At the time, it was, I think that was right around like either Ko-Rong or Millennials versus somewhere around that era. At that point, the only people who had ever been on the wrong side of the merge vote, and I will always give the caveat of there are plenty of cases, or at least a few cases, where people don't vote for the person who actually got booted, yeah. but it's because they're splitting the votes and they're clearly in on the big group plan and they just happen to not have their vote on. I'm counting that as being in on the merge vote, despite not technically voting correctly. But up until like at least the early 30s, the only people who had ever done it were Chris Doherty, Danny Boatwright, and Bob Crowley, all of whom took some timely immunity necklaces to make that happen.
Mm-hmm. And I imagine if you ran the numbers on the more recent seasons, that relationship probably would still hold true, but it certainly feels less high stakes when if it's okay, we're getting out this one person, and as long as you're in the gigantic supermajority, voting that person out, you're probably going to be okay. And that doesn't really tell you more about which of those people is well situated. So even going back to what, by those standards, is an old school season now in Survivor Philippines, you know, in that incredibly, I would say, enjoyable but also chaotic merge episode, you got the sense that, all right, well, okay, clearly RC has to go. We've all agreed on that, and now maybe Scoopin is going to be in the hot seat. But beyond that, was this a good episode for Denise and Malcolm? Was it good for Penna? Was it good for Pete and Abby? Like, you don't know, right? Like, it just, it feels like that's more open-ended. And to me, that's kind of exciting, because there's so much more game left to be played. But it means that that merge vote doesn't have the same finality, where it's, you see this abject gloom on people's faces where they know their dreams of $1 million are basically dead because of how that vote just went.
Well, I like that. I don't like that people can just lose the merge vote and know that it's pretty much, yeah, game over. But yeah, you are right that, you know, watching that episode in isolation, the stakes are a lot lower when you know that as long as I'm just not the person the big group gangs up on, I should at least have some room to play here going forward. To return to the earlier seasons here, Dom, I would say, not just among merge boots, merge episodes, just all time Survivor episodes, I would submit Roger from the Amazon as like one of the least subtle, this person is going to get booted at the end of this round episodes in history. But I actually still think that is fine in very few and far between cases. And Amazon definitely still stands out to me as an all time classic merge episode.
You did, on the notes, spell that as Roger with a D, like the kindly old guy from Australia.
Oh, I thought it was Roger with a D.
No, this was... Wait, who do you think it is?
No, you are right that I'm confusing the spelling. I know it's Roger Sexton. I can visualize him, and I know...
Okay.
Yeah, I thought that's how he spelled it, was with a D.
Or Roger Sexus, as I believe some of the forum denizens referred
to him. Just for you, Dom, I'm removing the D from the notes here.
The telltale D, yeah. So that is almost the prototype for the Chris Noble episode, right?
Yes.
Where, like, we are going to just bury this merge boot and embarrass them as much as possible with some help from them, of course. You know, they have a part to play in all of this. But we are making this a character study in how one person crashed and burned. And I kind of like having those episodes, actually, if they're timed well and used selectively.
I am with that for sure. And also wanted to give some credit to Eliza and the effing stick, and the Thailand fake merge I thought was at least interesting. It probably wasn't the best thing they could have done for the way the game was going to play out there. Fiji, I would co-sign, like, not the best thing they could have done for the way the game was going to play out there, but interesting to have them split like 5-5. I think when they throw kind of weird wrinkles into what people plan on being the merge or think is the merge or whatever, and it's not, it generally annoys me in real time, but definitely does have, I think, the intended effect in terms of standing out historically. One thing I thought,
I would throw Gabon into that category too, where if you go by what is technically the merge episode, then it's the most boring and humdrum Charlie boot of all time. But that fake out merge, which you can question if there was much integrity to it, gives us that amazing dethroning of Marcus in the previous week, which I'm willing to count that as this honorary merge episode of sorts. And had that not happened, then the actual merge, if it's possible, might have been even more dull somehow, where I think what would have happened is we get to the merge, Coda has the numbers, has the advantage, and someone from Fang goes home, and it is the most boring, pagonging, and perhaps most dominant win that we had seen on Survivor up until that point. I think Marcus just walks that season very easily.
I'm with that. I think spiritually that Marcus boot episode is right in line with the fake merges of the past, and I guess not the future. I don't think they've done the fake merge in quite a while, but yeah, I think that definitely lines up there as well, and I generally would guess that Marcus and that Coda Onion alliance would be in very good shape. It doesn't seem to me like Bob Crowley was necessarily going to be the one trying to take the bull by the horns there. No disrespect to Maine's own Bob Crowley, but I want to get to, Dom, my answer to the question that I brought up maybe 30-ish minutes ago at this point, and you have still successfully done an excellent job at evading. I think my number one most underrated merge, and it's certainly a merge that will stand out in people's minds, but the South Pacific merge. I think people think of South Pacific as a kind of I'm reluctant to use the word boring, but I'm just bad enough at synonyms that I'm going to go with boring. And obviously, I think the merge is going to stand out in people's memories. But in the grand scheme of Survivor merges, one thing I was kind of surprised by is how few actually were like super fascinating. And I think that has to do that has a lot to do with why Kageyan and Heroes versus Villains stand out so much. But to me, the two kind of second tier down contenders were the Amazon one that we already touched on, and then Cochrane flipping at that South Pacific merge. I really feel like that merge episode in isolation may, I don't think it's even a stretch to say that that's probably the best episode of South Pacific, but very high, I would say, on the list of just like all time Survivor episodes that if I were trying to hook someone who'd never seen the show before on becoming a Survivor fan, I think the South Pacific merge would be an episode that would take Survivor superfans a while to come up with. But once you hear that floated as an idea, I feel like it makes sense. The idea that these South Pacific merge could go a long way in hooking someone who's just never seen the show before.
To actually finally answer the question myself, I think that that Philippines merge, I don't think people debate its quality, really. I think it's just not really raised much when we talk about how consistently good that season was, and I think that's part of it. You know, if a season needs to be rescued by a particular episode, then of course that episode will come up more in discussion. But also, when the preceding episode was good and the episode after that was also really good, then it's easy for the merge episode to just become, you know, one in a string of episodes. Also, give me maybe the Blood versus Water merge episode, actually. I recall that being pretty fun, just with the downfall of King Aris and Venus, which maybe I'm bringing that up because I think it is the only merge episode in like a 15-season stretch that we haven't mentioned by name yet, so maybe it's underappreciated by default. But I recall that one being pretty fun as well.
Yeah, and I will... Just because this is the only season I can think of that we haven't explicitly mentioned by name yet, Cook Islands was also a season that existed and probably had a merge episode somewhere in there as well.
That was a scandalous one, right?
Oh, yeah.
Or I guess the most of the scandal occurred before they actually merged. But either way, not too many fireworks there.
Yeah, that is a bloodbath of a Wikipedia entry to look at as you watch all of the Raro tribe get voted out. I think it was 8 in a row when I was looking at it, and it predated the merge by a little
is
bit.
It, eight in a Raro?
Yeah, strong. All right. Dom, the only other thing that I had written down in my notes, I don't know if this is deliberate by you, but I didn't type this, and someone has now typed the word sad with like six D's in front of my only other note here, and I don't know what that means. So maybe
that's just Ravioli offering his input.
That's hilarious. Ravioli being Dom's cat. That's awesome. Apparently Ravioli found it sad. That one thing that surprised me is I was just kind of going through the Wikipedia to make sure I wasn't overlooking anything massive. When I was thinking about the Survivor All-Stars merge, I was saying to myself, who the hell was the merge boot? Because, like, Lex and Kathy and Shein all made it to the jury. It couldn't have been them. Turns out, they merged with 9 people there. Who knew?
Yeah, that's how all of this comes about, right? Because they, for reasons left unknown or perhaps better left unsaid, they added, like, another fake-out merge swap, whatever you want to call it, at the 11th hour. And that's how we get Amber being stranded by herself on the other tribe and Rob approaching Lex at the challenge. And that's how this bad blood and that storyline all develops.
Right. I remember that happening directly before the merge, but I thought there were still 10 people left at the merge. And so I was surprised to find out that Lex himself was a former Survivor merge boot. I had completely forgotten about that there, Dom. But yeah, any other glaring omissions that are jumping to mind for you, or do you feel like we've sufficiently covered a solid, like, what, like, What happened at the Millennials versus Gen X merge? That was probably good, right?
Michelle Schubert, the Dragon Queen herself, right?
I have no idea how that... It was just the young kids, not really...
Probably.
Yeah.
I want to say Marquesas, where Boston Rob, of all people, is the merge boot. That feels like it should have some importance in Survivor lore, but literally have no visual memory of that episode or that season, frankly.
I remember he and Kathy got to meet up the same way that I think it was Sean and Jenna met up in season one to come up with the merge tribe name and paint the flag or whatever. I don't know if Rob and Kathy were necessarily doing all that, but they definitely were enjoying some Coors Light over the course of that little private getaway. And then similarly, actually, the way that the... Oh, no, I guess that was the swap in Amazon where Dave and Jenna got to go off by themselves. But that's a massively underutilized kind of wrinkle in Survivor seasons.
How about, and I have no idea how this one hasn't come up yet, give me Pearl Islands with the Outcast twist and Savage being blindsided and all of the craziness there.
So I definitely agree that that is a very noteworthy episode, having the Outcast twist there. It just didn't stand out to me in terms of, it seemed like Lil was pretty obviously going to flip the whole time. And that, I don't know, for whatever reason, did not make it onto my notes, although you are correct that we should absolutely be noting that for the record, that that is an extremely important kind of episode in the course of Survivor history, for sure. Dom, what else on Survivor merges? Are we just hopeless going forward that the merge is going to be something we're going to be able to remember beyond like a month after seeing it happen?
Maybe just the episode themselves, after watching them, I will struggle to remember any details about. So that might actually force us to be on a more reliable schedule, where like, if we know we are going to have no lasting memory of an episode and we'll have to rewatch it if we leave it long enough, then maybe that lights a fire underneath us to actually get in here and record something before that all fades away.
We'll see. Okay. I feel like, at least for the time being, and I'm sure we've probably missed some somehow, despite talking about 90% of the seasons that have ever aired to this point. Thank you, Dom, for remembering to get Pearl Islands in there near the end. I feel good about having at least gotten into the podcast universe some more discussion about Survivor merges for what it turns out is not the first time in my career, and very embarrassing to have completely forgotten that I already sat down and did this once with Rob. But there we go on that. Now, Dom, one other item on the agenda here. We, in I think it was the most recent podcast, maybe the one before that, got in one game of No More Lockies there, and you are owed a chance at evening the score up here. So unless you have anything else to dive into this week, I would be happy to give you that opportunity.
And I would be happy to oblige to take that crown back that's rightfully mine.
Okay, so first of all, anyone unfamiliar with No More Lockies, hopefully the rules are pretty self-evident as we get a round or two into this. And as usual, want to flag up, this is 100% ripping off the intellectual property of Alex Horn, Tim Key, and Mark Watson over at No More Jockeys on YouTube. This is the Survivor version, No More Lockies. Dom, do you want to be player one or player zero?
So refresh my memory and then also the audience's memory on those roles.
So generally, one person just died on No More Jockeys. It's always Tim Key goes first, key to play, and he can start anywhere he wants. And to get in front of either one of us potentially coming in here with some kind of set agenda or category they've studied hard on and are going to skew the direction in their favor, I have proposed that someone be player zero, where before the first name is given, player zero gives them the season they must choose from for the player.
Okay, I will be giving the season then.
Okay.
All right, so you will be kicking us off with someone from Survivor... Give me Survivor Redemption Island, just to start really at the bottom of the barrel.
Okay, fair enough. I will go for Natalie Tenorelli, No More Teenagers.
No More Tina Reddies. Okay.
That's good. I can't believe I've never heard Tina Reilly before.
There actually aren't that many teenagers in the grand scheme of things, but I could definitely see myself getting called out by someone who was like 19 at the time of filming and then turned 20 or whatever. I guess she wasn't the first, because it was, there was, I think, one or two before her. But
I'm going to say the people that stand out in my memory as being billed as like the youngest survivors ever was, first of all, Frosty when he was 20 on China was like a big deal. And then Spencer Doom was, I think, the first teenager in Token Chains. And then Will Wall came along. There was, I want to say, Jessica, who was the second boot on I Will Go With David versus Goliath, but I'm not confident about that, was a teenager as well. But you are correct. I now realize I am reducing the field probably far less than one, or at least somewhat less than 1% here.
Okay. Well, I guess to piggyback off of that,
you'd be very unfortunate to break out here.
Yeah, I mean, if I were to say, piggybacking off of that, and then just name a teenager, you would justifiably be able to just mock me for whatever you want. Okay, give me Frosty from Survivor China. No more. No more athletes.
No more, like, their Chiron is some sort of athletic thing?
Yeah, I don't mean has never done a fun run or never, played tennis in college. I mean, no one who is billed as an athlete.
Okay. And I like that you say Frosty with no category in mind. You just want to live really close to the edge and go with the only 20-year-old.
Yeah.
All right. I will avoid athletes. I will avoid teenagers. I don't think I've gotten this opportunity yet, so I think this will be the first time that I will be playing Kelly Wentworth, and I will say no more people who share a last name with someone else who has played Survivor,
regardless of any familial relations.
Correct.
Or lack thereof. Okay.
Happy hunting.
Feels very easy to like accidentally snooker yourself with that one.
That's the point. It's probably going to be me, in all fairness. It's probably a big advantage for you.
Okay, give me
the last name. One is, I feel like that's the one that whenever this game is done, we're going to find out that, actually, you could have had me like multiple times before this.
Give me Mick Trimming. And I don't want to say no more feckless people. No more doctors.
Okay. So I don't think there's another Trimming out there to be had. I don't think I can get you on this. And I will now move over to, let's go with Lex Vandenberg. Let's play it safe. I'm pretty confident there are no other Vandenbergs to be had. I will say no more ludicrously tattooed people. Like, when you look at them, it's impossible not to see how many tattoos they have.
Might have some edge cases to adjudicate.
We may get into the weeds on that one, but I feel like there is not a picture of Lex where you can't see some multiple tattoos on him.
Okay. Give me Butch Lockley. Doing a very quick last name check for Lockley there.
No more Lockleys?
Exactly. No more teachers.
Wow, you were killing me with these. I don't know people's professions here, so this could get dicey. I will play, got to avoid last names. And before I say, for instance, I am not playing this, but I'm running a hypothetical by you. If I were to say Christian Hubicki, he is explicitly Dr. Christian Hubicki. I assume you do not mean medical doctors and that you are extending this to PhDs and anyone who is technically called doctor.
I had intended it just as medical doctors, but I think this adds a fun new wrinkle, so let's broaden the scope.
Say, I'm not willing to fly that close to the sun to play Christian Hubicki here. I certainly respect him as a doctor, albeit not a medical doctor. But let's just play it a bit safer than someone who has a PhD. I will play someone who does not share a last name with anyone else. I feel pretty confident in Kelly Wigglesworth not sharing a last name with anyone else, and I don't remember any of the other categories already, so hopefully she is not a doctor or a teacher anywhere along the way there. And I feel somewhat guilty doing this because this has been an Achilles heel for you in the past, but I will go with no more losing finalists.
So I don't know if this is a challenge or more of a clarifying question here. Does a river rafting guide count as a teacher?
No. No. Stop it.
Look, you are giving instruction. You are teaching people how to do things.
We're talking kindergarten through doctoral students. We are not talking teachers of... She's a rafting guide under Chiron.
Teacher Char, would he
yes.
fall under that rubric?
I think he's kind of the gray area.
I guess you could argue for some athletic aspect to river rafting guides as well, but I guess we'll leave that one there for now. So you said Kelly Wigglesworth, no more losing finalists. All well and good. Give me... Okay, follow-up question. If they are married to another contestant, then... Like, Amber Burkitt Mariano, is she a Mariano? Is she a Burkitt? Is she both? Is she neither? Who knows in this society that we live in?
If you want to run the risk of does Mariano coincide with any other Survivor last names, I welcome you to take that chance.
Okay, I will refrain from doing so for the time being. Okay, give me... John Kenny, no one else who shares a name with someone from their own season.
Okay. That may throw a wrench into my next planned move, but I don't think it does. And now let me wonder if I can challenge on John Kenny in some way. I don't think he was a teacher. I do wonder if he was some sort of athlete, and I am... going to remind the audience at this point that you do get two challenges, but if you lose both, then that's just game over for you. So I could potentially challenge here just thinking that maybe he was an athlete, but I'm gonna say he was a model. I believe that is what his Chiron was, and if not, he certainly could have been. So, man, I think not being able to cite anyone else with the last name Kenny, I will have to move it along and play John Cochran. No more redheads.
John Kenny, for the record, is a mechanical bull operator.
Oh, of course. Of course.
Yeah, one of the more unique, I will say, occupations in Survivor history.
Challenge.
And yeah, I think if I said no more mechanical bull operators, you would be right on that buzzer, I'm sure, getting in there. So John Cochran, no more redheads.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
I shouldn't say this because I'm definitely going to jinx myself, but I've got a feeling you're about to walk into a category I just feel like you've forgotten about that I remember, but I don't know that it's going to happen yet. We'll see, but I feel good. This is the first time I've ever felt good that I have a better grip on the categories than you do.
God, give me Erin Lobdell, no more hairstylist.
Okay. And she narrowly avoided being a finalist, so probably did not lose in the finals. Not a teacher, not a doctor, not a mechanical bull operator. I believe I have to let that one go. So
you sure do.
Man, with that out of the way, I will play someone whose last name does not conflict. So let's bear that in mind, Colin, because that is one you forgot about and almost fell into. I will, I guess, go with... Nope, we will not go with Ethan Zahn because he was an athlete. Man, this is already very quickly getting annoying here. I will play... Nope, not someone from a Blood versus Water season who was out there with their spouse, because that is probably going to conflict with other people. Man. Okay, let's do... Okay, I feel comfortable about this one. I will play Denise Stapley, who is not a doctor. And I will say... No more people who are definitely under 5'5".
God. Is there a way to verify any of this? Is there some, like, height chart on the Survivor?
None that I'm aware of, but I feel like we can definitely say Denise is under 5'5".
Okay. Sure.
That may be a dicey category in terms of challenges. It's going to be tough to prove that someone's... Yeah,
can I, like, challenge the premise? If Denise turned out to be 5'6",
I'm going to say no more people who are clearly under 5'3".
What if she's over 5'3"?
I don't believe that's the case.
Okay. I'm going to surreptitiously Google Denise Stapley height.
Here's the official category. It's to pay tribute to the legitimate no more jockeys here. No more people who... When you think about them, you think to yourself, that person seemed particularly short on their season.
No more short kings and or queens.
Correct.
Okay. God. Okay, give me... God. All right. Fuck. Can't do that. I'll do that.
Yeah, it's so brutal. You get into these cycles of, like, all you can think about are the rules you're trying to avoid, and thus all the names flooding into your head are people who violate those rules.
All right, give me Jeff Varner, no one who has left a season without a vote.
Okay. I mean, I certainly do know that Jeff Varner has tattoos, but I'm not going to...
As in, has been removed from a season, you know...
So
versus
anyone who has left versus, a season.
Okay, so if you have, and I'm saying that to take out the people who, like, oh, they made it to the finals, so technically they left without a vote. None of that.
Okay. We're,
you know, so people who were in the main game of Survivor and who left without receiving, or left without going through the process of Tribal Council.
At any point in their career. So if they did it once ever, then they are off the board. Okay.
Correct.
I will say he definitely has tattoos, but he is not a person that you look at and all the tattoos jump off the page.
Does he give you the vibe of someone who has tattoos? Is the
right
criteria?
Yes.
Yeah.
Okay. I feel like there may be some other Varner along the way. I'm thinking of Christine Varner from Big Brother and now on Twitter. Whose last name I don't think was even Varner when she was on Big Brother.
I don't think it is anymore.
I don't know.
Either way, it's definitely
whatever. Big Brother, not in the mix here, but a worthwhile Twitter follow, I guess. I will go for, man, it feels like we're already running out of the entire field of players here. Man, just not knowing people's last names is killing me. I will play, man, I every single person, I'm so nervous that someone else is going to have their last name, and I'm just not going to be aware of it. So with that, I guess I will fairly confidently play Tina. No, she's pretty short. I can't play Tina. She's not, like, remarkably short, but I feel like she would potentially, Alan, you could pull up a photo of Tina looking much shorter than everyone around her, conceivably. So I will avoid that, and I will instead play someone I feel pretty good about being tall. I will play Tyson Apostle, I think. Let me just quick... no, he was a professional cyclist, and that is not going to be the way that I lose this game. What's that?
I said, God damn it. I thought
yeah,
I had
sorry.
It.
And for to clarify, for anyone new to the game, you can float out whatever names you want. They are not formally submitted until you have put in your next rule for that person. So I will avoid Tyson Apostle. I will instead play... I mean, it feels like there must be someone else who shares David Murphy's last name along the way. I feel like I want to pull someone from that sort of just after Heroes versus Villains era, but I'm just terrified about all their last names. I feel like I never look in that range when playing No More Lockies, and I'm not doing them enough justice here. But I just don't have the confidence. I will play and be very ready to lose, but I feel like I've just taken too much time on this turn, unfortunately. Give me Matt Elrod, and the category will... Hang on. Is No More Models is not a thing, right? We're just looking at No More Doctors and No More Teachers. He's an actor slash model slash, like, youth pastor or whatever he was on at the time. Yeah, I will go for Matt Elrod. And I guess to bring it full circle here with the theme of the episode, Dom, I will say no more merge boots.
Okay, haven't we taken a few merge boots off the list already? Or am
yeah,
I already,
it doesn't apply retroactively. It's just going forward.
Of course.
No
yeah,
more.
It just, yeah, okay. Almost named a losing finalist for you. So not going to give you that particular gift.
I feel good that I'm not challenged on Matt Elrod. I couldn't think of anything he was violating, but I was very ready to lose on that play.
And I was just about to name a merge boot as well. I'm really tripping over myself to fall into this. I don't know if that. I think this other person is valid, but I don't know if the rule that I'm suggesting is really kosher. So take them off the board.
Dom's going to come in here with just the most problematic rule sets. All right. Don't need to give any firm examples of what that might be.
Surely not. Okay, give me... This person's definitely not an athlete. Give me Jean-Robert Vallande, No More Poker Players.
Fair enough. And I don't believe he fits any of the categories that I am at least able to come up with at this hour. So I will now play Rob Sesternino, and I would ding a bell if I had one. I will say no more podcasters. How about that? No more. Not just, okay, here's what it is. Not people who have their own Survivor podcast. No more friends of the podcast for us. No more people who have been on this podcast.
That would be a real bad one to mess up, just showing how little they've stuck in our memory after their truly incredible, every single one of them, appearances. Okay, give me... Give me Scout from Vanuatu. No more people with glasses. No more perspectacled Survivor contestants.
I had debated playing that. And is this a... No more constantly wearing glasses, or no more you can find pictures? For instance, the example that comes to mind, and sorry to once again go back to this, but like Kelly Wentworth was a very much had glasses out there, but not at all like always wearing them. You can certainly find pictures of her wearing glasses, and I think this is the case for a lot of people, but they're definitely not a glasses wearer as far as I'm concerned, like a Stephen Fishback or Aubrey Bracco.
There's definitely a smell test of sorts with this one, but let's say if I Google them, what is the first photo that pops up? In their cast photo, are they wearing glasses or not?
Okay, and remind me again which name... Oh, you just played Scout. Okay.
Yeah.
And Scout... Dom? challenge.
Can I help you? What?
Scout Cloud Lee. No. I am pretty sure there are some survivors with the last name Lee. I am going to specifically cite Mookie Lee, who I think that is his last name, and I'm going to now look it up. But this is my challenge. I'm going to say Mookie Lee is someone who shares a last name with Scout. So I am now going to Wikipedia. I am going to go to the Fiji page, and I am now learning that if you just type in the word Fiji on Wikipedia, it doesn't automatically assume you're talking about survivor contestants. Got a good picture of Yao Man here. We got some contestants, and we
just
have
put me out of my.
We have ourselves, age 25, from Chicago, Illinois, one Mookie Lee.
I would also have given you losing finalist Becky Lee from the previous season, but oh god, losing on a Mookie challenge. That's the way to go. Good god.
Yeah, that was a wild game. I mean, that was a hell of an offer from you, and I now realize that I don't like that as soon as we implemented this rule, I then won the next game because we forgot about it. So I will remind you to challenge me to prove it.
Prove what?
I have to get another one or else it's a double loss. Okay. All right.
Well, I feel like naming another person who is – I mean, I guess if it was that easy, then I wouldn't have messed up so terribly in the first place. But hey, okay. Name someone.
So it's just a free. The last time I did this, I screwed up, and you just didn't notice. It should have been a double loss last time.
Wait, who did you say?
I said Kelly Goldsmith, and she's a last name noun.
Oh, of course. Okay,
and
well,
just bricked it.
Have at it, my friend. Be careful.
I'm tempted to play Kelly Goldsmith, but I think she's a teacher, actually, so let's not do that.
that really would be a way to go.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. So... I guess I will play. I mean, if you get me here, you get me here. This is not a doctor. This is not a lawyer. This is, or excuse me, not a teacher or a lawyer. Not someone with tattoos. Not a losing finalist. Not short. And I forget all of the other rules. Doesn't wear glasses. So I will play, hopefully, Rudy Bosch for the win.
A good one to end on, a retired Navy SEAL. There's no way to spin that one. Not a redhead, doesn't wear glasses, not a doctor. I think you got it.
All right. I mean, I really do want to commend you for a game well played. Every single one of those turns I thought was going to be my last.
Well, that's not me playing well. That's you just avoiding disaster and letting me walk into a trap.
I mean, I'm guessing you were in a roughly similar boat there, but I was just throwing names out, mostly guessing and hoping that they didn't violate some rule that I had forgotten about to this point. But there we go. No more Lockies. Playtime number 3, game number 4, officially in the books there, Dom. A bit of a lead now being extended upon, and at this point I'm actually going to formally announce my retirement from No More Lockies, because there's no way I'm going to maintain like a 3-to-1 ratio here, so I think we're just going to max out and cash it in here.
We will be out of ideas soon enough, though. You will have to come back into the ring
I would never do such a thing. I feel spirit of the game is absolutely paramount as far as No More Lockies is concerned. So you will definitely get your chances, especially if we keep not having other things to talk about for back halves of episodes here. But I think people are into the idea and the episodes, and I'm certainly into it. It's a fun game. And once again, big shout out to Alex Horn, Tim Key, and Mark Watson for unknowingly allowing us to completely rip off their intellectual property. So, Dom, game 4 in the books. I'm sure it is going to get more competitive as time goes on here, so looking forward to whenever we can get game 5 underway. But for the time being, anything else that you want to get to this week?
On that inglorious note, let's get out of here.
I now recognize that I've just completely spoiled. This is going to be up on the main feed, as was the first round of the first two rounds of No More Lockies, but the game that we've been referencing was over on the patron feed, so spoiler alert, but if you would like to hear more No More Lockies and other weekly bonus episodes every Saturday over on the Patreon feed. That is patreon.com/DomandColin. So I think that is going to wrap it up for us here today. We will talk to you guys next week. Take care, everybody.